Head home for the holidays with Abercrombie & Fitch. We all know our calendars are about to get chaotic. For nonstop plans, Abercrombie has the pieces to curate your perfect seasonal wardrobe. Jumpers and denim for casual plans, party dresses for nights out, and comfy matching sets for everything in between. Keep the chaos cute this season in Abercrombie. Shop their new holiday outfits in the app, online, or in stores.
So here's the truth. Anything we attach to our ego becomes something our mind will protect like it's our life. That's why a simple comment, a disagreement, or even a lost football game can feel super personal because somewhere along the way we attached it to who we think we are. Welcome to chapter 7 of Mike Wood's podcast to book series. In this chapter, Mike breaks down how identity attachments create pain and how letting them go sets you free. His Christmas tree metaphor will change the way you see yourself forever, because we were never the ornaments we hung on ourselves, not the titles, not the roles, not the beliefs. We were never the Christmas tree. We have always just been the tree. So let's get into it. A quick shout out to Dr. Bradley Nelson and iHeartRadio for your sponsorship. And to our audience, please do not forget to like and subscribe before you leave today. Mike, what is an attachment? And how do we get these off our trees?
thank you for having me. And an attachment is, it is something that you are identifying as. You know, it's something that we hang on, we attach to our ego, and then our subconscious mind is going to protect it as if it's the true self. I like to use a little analogy of a two-year-old kid walking along the edge of the pool. And if the kid falls in and almost drowns, well, we could pick that kid up and we could get the water out of his lungs, but the kid is terrified, and that's a fearful moment, and that the subconscious mind is going to store that as something the kid needs to be protected from, wants to make sure that he doesn't do that again. So the subconscious mind is going to make that kid hold on to that memory, so the kid, the next time it walks along the edge of the pool, is going to be scared of that water so it doesn't fall in again. If you attach being a good podcast host to your ego, the subconscious mind is going to protect that the same way it protects that little boy from the pool. It doesn't know the difference between the true self and something that you've attached to your ego.
Okay. So what are some of the strongest attachments people tend to have without even realizing it?
Your job is a major one, but as you're growing up, you get attached to being a good daughter or a son, a good brother or a friend, you know, especially in those early teenage years when our ego is really developing from the age of 14 to 21 is when we really start putting attachments on there. Now we do it before that, but you know, that's when we decide what we want to do for a living. It's what when we decide who we are, what type of a person. Am I, a tech guy, or am I a sports person, or am I eclectic? You know, whatever it is, we start to attach, you know, we start to get up into the political world. And we start to identify with certain ideas. And once we start to do that, now we're just taking ornaments and we're decorating this Christmas tree with all of these ornaments, and every single one that we put on there is now a source of pain. Whenever that ornament gets attacked, or there's a perceived attack on that ornament, we have a physical reaction to it. And it's visceral. Like, you could feel it in your stomach, and it literally can make you sick and make you react to people. That's why political conversations, religious conversations, they can get heated. You know, especially like college sports. You know, you have some fist fights in college sports, overseas soccer. You know, there's people die virtually every major soccer game in Europe.
Yeah.
Why? Because they attach to this team, and then now somebody across from them is attacking that, and these people they get excited.
Yeah, my city just hosted the Grey Cup, and I've been to so many football games, and to see the fans screaming and yelling at each other, I'm always just like, how is someone so into that? It's so interesting, but you're right, it's an attachment.
So they're feeling threatened. Those other fans are attacking
And
their
there's some
physical
alcohol
needs.
involved.
And well, the alcohol is going to make the
Enhance it.
emotions. It's going to even make it worse. Now all of a sudden you got a fist fight in the middle of the stands for, and obviously many people are, alcohol is adding to that. But, when you're at a sporting event and you see these guys, and I go to UT football games because I got a bunch of friends and we'll go to watch parties and whatever. And me and my wife, we'll kind of squeeze out when they're losing because it turns bad and everybody's negative. It's kind of it's a bad day because they're all feeling physically attacked, And then they start attacking the TV and the coach for the play they called and that player who
Refs.
didn't catch the ball. And, it turns into a negative environment that's kind of difficult to be around, to be honest, if I'm going to maintain my peace.
Yeah. So why did you like, why is it bad for someone to attach to their title? Like you use the example of if I attach to being a good podcaster. So why is that bad?
Well, because if somebody attacks you and says you are the shittiest podcaster that they have ever seen, right? When I say that, that I'm not being mean to you, right? You know that I think you're really good at this. But typically, when somebody does that, it leaves an uneasy feeling in their stomach. Just me saying that, and
Right.
it's that I'm not attacking you. The reason we shouldn't do this is just to protect our peace. You are so much more than a podcaster, right?
Right.
And so when we attach, it makes us small. When we unattach, we become bigger and much more. I give a good example. So my wife, she stays at home. She takes care of me. She takes care of all the kids. And she works her ass off just doing a wide range of things in between all that. And occasionally, because I'm working and I'm surrounded by a bunch of beautiful young people, and she's at home and interacting with a 10-year-old most days, she might call me up sometimes, and it's rare, but it might happen sometimes where she just, a little awkward moment, right? Where she's not feeling right and she's a little uncomfortable. In the past, when she would have called me, I would have felt an attack against being a good husband because something I was doing wasn't making her feel right. And I would respond like, "Don't you trust me? Don't you understand that I live my life for you?" I would have a negative physical response, and I would try to protect myself versus the way that I react now. Once I learned to be able to take being a husband off of my self-map. If she was to call me right now, I could just, "All right, baby, tell me what's going on. How can I make you feel better?" I'm not reacting to anything. I'm just able to sit with her and help her feel better and understand what's going on because I'm not feeling threatened. There's no attack on me. And it sounds crazy, but me removing being a husband off of my Christmas tree has made me a better husband. Doesn't mean I'm not a husband, just means I'm not identifying with it. And the subconscious mind is not having to protect myself from that. So, and we could do that in all facets. I've taken off, the cool thing about this is when I first started doing this program, there's a young girl that took my course very early on, and she took everything off herself now. Right. The first time I did it, I took politics, football, and being a shoe guy. Right. So I took those all off
Being a
myself.
shoe guy.
Yeah. Well, I wear Jordans and stuff to work. So I dress like this every day, and I wear like tennis shoes or
So shoes
whatever.
are your thing. Okay, so now you're not a shoe guy.
No, and I still wear them, but if they get dirty, I don't care. I'm grateful that. You know what I mean? They just don't. I have fun with it. It doesn't mean I can't have fun with shoes. Just means I'm not attached to it. I don't care. If I don't wear cool shoes today, I don't care. Like, It's just I'm having fun with it, and it's not anything that I care about. So when I was going through this course, I made this part a vital part of it because it changed my life. When I stopped being a Titans fan and removed politics, so much unwarranted pain left my life. Not talking politics all day long every day. And then when the Titans would lose, I'd be miserable till like Wednesday. And then when they'd lose in the playoffs, I'd be miserable for 2 weeks. Like all of that just went away. I can watch the football game now. And I just enjoy the football game.
Right.
Well, anyway, I went through this program and this young girl starts doing it, and she took everything off herself. Now she took off, the first thing she took off was being a dog mom, because whenever she would leave her dog somewhere, she just couldn't live without the dog. She was just miserable anytime she ever had to leave her dog. So she took off dog mom, and then she took off daughter. And
ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy customizable themes that let you build your brand, marketing tools that get your products out there, integrated shipping solutions that actually save you time. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you. Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com/setup.
The little girl literally went to her mom and sat her down and said, I no longer identify as being a mom, a daughter. And I'm like, I did not tell you to do that. You know, she talked it out with her mom, and her mom eventually understood. It hurt her feelings because of the way she addressed it to her. But at the end of the day, she took that off her mat, and it made it to where she wasn't reacting to her mom's wants, needs, in a negative way when she felt pressured, right? Or because now all of a sudden she wasn't feeling attacked, and it truly did make her better. But I was truly inspired by her, and I went back and started working on mine after I watched what she did. And yeah, it changed my life once I took all the big stuff off. And I just became better in so many ways. I took off being a COO of Jarrett Companies. I took, a dad, a grandfather, a brother, a friend. I took all those things off because I'm so much more than all of those. And now if somebody was to tell me I was a bad dad, or my kids give me constructive criticism, I just say, oh man, I'm sorry. I listen to them. I don't feel attacked. I don't come back at them with that negative response, trying to defend myself, because there's nothing to defend. I'm not defending anything. I'm just talking to my son who's got an issue, and you know, what can I do to resolve it? And I could process it without all the unwarranted negative emotions. It's right. Extremely powerful. It's liberating, and it's freeing, and it's so easy to do.
Well, I want to ask you how to do it, but what is the difference between, like, how can we tell the difference between a healthy passion and an unhealthy attachment? And I also want to say that society doesn't set us up so well for removing these attachments, because everywhere you look in life, it's like, what kind of person are you? What is your favorite dress in these four to get to know you? Like, they make you choose. And yeah. Like, what is your favorite color? Which box are you in this chart? So society literally sets us up from the moment we are born to identify as something. Are you a sports girl? Are you into reading? Like, and we identify our whole lives. So yeah, what is the difference between a healthy passion and an unhealthy attachment? Or how can we tell the difference?
Well, I would think, you know, I like to write goals down, right? So I would think a healthy passion would be something you're doing because it's pushing you to somewhere you want to go into the future, whether it's more money, you know, financial freedom, your health, your wellness. If you can write it down on a piece of paper and say, look, this healthy passion that I have right here, to be a business owner, to be, you know, maybe you got to get your nursing degree or whatever it is that you're chasing. Those are all healthy things that you could chase. I would say it's healthy if you could write it down on a piece of paper and you say, this is my goal and these are my action items that I want to get. But don't put anything on your tree. Like, you could chase anything that you want in this world, but you don't have to attach to anything. We get to still make a decision of whether or not this is where we want to go and this is what we want to do. It doesn't mean we don't care about anything. It just means we're just free from the attachments of it. Mm-hmm. And it's going to keep us healthier mentally, and it's going to allow us to react to things in a peaceful, loving, compassionate way, because we're not reacting out of protection, like we're trying to protect something. Because that's what's happening. You know, when the Titans used to lose, I was yelling at the TV. Why? Like, there was nothing for me to protect there. Like, it's just a game. You know, now that I've taken, you know, sports attack, any teams off of my Christmas tree, you know, when I watch the games now and the game's over, I can't help it, but I'm always watching the losing team, because, you know, everybody's celebrating, but somebody on the other bench is crying, and it's the yin and the yang of the world. And now I get to see and experience both the yin and the yang without like a compassionate disconnect from it all. And I'm excited for the guy who won, but I'm also, you know, compassionate for the guy who gave his all and he lost. And it's,
right.
I don't know. It's just a completely different experience. Now, I still love sports, you know, the greatest athletes on the planet doing something. I think it's amazing. They're gifted and it's amazing, but no sense in getting so worked up over it. It's just a game, you know.
Yeah.
Go down the road here and go to St. Jude Children's Hospital, and you realize that game means absolutely nothing.
Well, that gives you, definitely gives you context for sure. Perspective. There's
exactly.
Also, like, I've been attached to items and objects before. I had a very unhealthy attachment to this water bottle of mine. I actually still use it, but I've removed that attachment. And I would actually have this vision of myself walking outside and dropping it, and it's smashing, and I would get a visceral reaction from the thought of it breaking. And so I was so attached to this stupid water bottle. And then one day I left it at the yoga studio and I thought it was gone. And for some reason, it felt relief. Like, I felt this relief leave my shoulders, like, wow, like, that was, I'm actually relieved that that's gone, because now I don't have to worry about this thing anymore. Like, it was kind of that feeling. And it made me think, I'm like, why was I so attached to this water bottle? Like, what was it doing for me that I was so protective of it? So now me and the bottle have a different relationship. I still use it, but people get attached to objects and things and items all the time. Can you speak to that?
Absolutely. Well, it's in every major religion on the planet, Buddhism, Christianity. Like, Buddhists will basically say you can't be happy unless you get rid of 100% of your attachments. You're never going to find peace without that. And, you know, Christianity is basically saying give away all your money. You know, like, if you're rich, you're basically doomed. Like, because those you're holding on to your money, and that money, trying to hold on to it. Anything you try to hold on to is going to cause you pain, whether it's money or a spouse or a brother, a friend, because now all of a sudden it's not free. You're kind of going against nature, you know, and we're all one. So at the end of the day, you're holding on to something that was never yours to hold on to, you know. It all is just going to cause you pain. It's like when I really realized that, I needed to take shoes off of myself, man. Another item, right? My grandkid, he was about 3 at the time. We walked out of a restaurant, we're all eating, and I'm helping him get in the car, and we're walking through puddles. And then he just thought it was the funniest thing to start stomping on my shoes. and I had taken my self map, you know, or my Christmas tree. And my first initial reaction for about a half a second was, and then I started laughing with him and like, okay, stomp it again. Like, it just doesn't matter, you know. That, so I'm having a good moment with my grandkid instead of yelling at him or getting upset because he thought it was fun to stomp on my shoes. Now, it's not okay to stomp everybody's shoes, but Grandpa didn't care and, you know, have fun, kid. Like, I just don't care. Those possessions can cause us as much pain as anything.
Yeah, I think a good test is if you can picture yourself giving something away to someone or losing something. If you can imagine yourself doing that without any reaction. And I know that's really hard to say in terms of a relationship or a partner, detaching from, you know, being someone's partner, like your husband. So like, I'm sure you don't want to lose your wife, but detaching from the expectation of it perhaps is a different way to look at it. How do you detach from someone like a wife or a husband or relationship?
Well, you gotta play that game in your head. You gotta basically say, you know, what if she came to me and said she wanted to leave? You know, how would I react? Well, and then of course you had that visceral response. It's like, oh gosh. But then you go, well, if I truly love her unconditionally, and that's what's going to make her happy, if I truly love her, I would support her. And then fight through all of the jealousy and the other thing, and then actually get true detachment from the being a husband and this being property. This woman is not my property, you know, and she's a free, beautiful human. And me holding on to her is going to cause her pain and me pain. And so if I can love her unconditionally, whether she's with me or when she's not, I'm going to be so much better of a husband and a partner to be present with her when I don't bring all of that unwarranted attention. And it's very difficult to do that. That's not an easy thing to do. It's very challenging. But it's also brings comfort and safety when somebody's having a insecure moment, and we all have them, and you just can calmly say, you know, what can I do for you right now? How can I make you feel better? All of a sudden everything changes. You bond, you get closer. Everything becomes easier, lighter, no pressure. And without that, because it's virtually impossible, or at least it was for me, to be able to have that type of response until I removed that involuntary subconscious reaction that came with, you know, the interactions of a marriage, you know, because they are so interdependent on each other. It's hard. It's hard to balance that back and forth without having some type of an attachment. And I worked really hard on removing that, and it just made my relationship so much stronger. It really did.
Well, I can relate to that, and I wonder if the audience can relate to this too. In my past relationship, the most recent one that I just got out of, when we were first together, I had a really unhealthy attachment to him, and when he would go out and do things on his own, it was like I couldn't relax and I couldn't even sleep until he was like in the bed, and I was like anxious and wanting to hear from him, and I didn't want that. Like, I was, it's not that I'm paranoid, like it was just this thing within me that was always thinking about him and like hope everything's okay and what's going on, and it was very unhealthy. And as soon as I healed that, which took probably about a year, then I was able to go to sleep, and everything was good, and our relationship changed, because suddenly it was like he could feel that attachment leave, and then he felt it's like a light, because then he's like, I trust him, and our relationship evolved in a good way as well. How did the removal of the COO, the dad, the husband, actually make you better in those roles in your situations? Wow.
Man, that's a great question. Let's go to work, you know, the business side of things. It made it to where it doesn't matter what problem is going on in the building. Guess whose fault it is? It's mine. I got zero worry about taking on a problem and identifying with it. Like, oh, that's my problem. When I go into a meeting, and let's just say we flooded a building. This actually happened. The first time I used this it was amazing. We flooded a building, and I'm not a fire sprinkler guy, right? You know, so all the fire protection sprinkler heads, we were 22 floors up in a building, and sprinkler head popped and it ran for 3 or 4 hours and flooded everything below it. And it was about a $1.2 million insurance claim, right? So it's a bad day. You keep doing that, you're out of business. You only get one or two of those, and then you're not insurable, and then you're out of business. So it's a big deal. And so I'm working with a bunch of sprinkler guys who know that I know nothing about sprinklers, right? And we go into this thing, and the company was relatively new. We'd been in business for about 4 years. And I go into a meeting with about eight people, and I'm the boss in that setting. And I made it my goal to take 100% responsibility for everything that was happening. And if I was attached to this role of a COO, and I can't make a mistake. If this is my fault, I'm not going to be able to sleep at night. But if I don't attach to that role as a COO of Jarrett Companies or the president of Jarrett Fire Protection, then all of a sudden I can take ownership of all this and it doesn't bother me. So the first thing I said when I got in there is, guys, I want you guys all to know that I'm taking 100% responsibility for this mistake. And they all just looked at me like, you're crazy. This ain't your fault. Like, literally, a couple of the guys said that. And I said, guys, how much training have you guys had since you've been here? They all looked around because we're non-union company. Like, none. Nobody's ever been trained on anything. We never trained anybody on anything. I said, and we all know that this could have been prevented without a shut-off in your truck. It's a tool that could have plugged the sprinkler head really quickly. And I said, and we don't have any of those in our trucks, right? All right. And I said, and who's ever been trained on one if you did have one? I'm like, nobody. I said, guys, then that's my fault. I know that we are a young company, we're growing really fast, and we haven't put $1 into training. So I'm taking 100% responsibility for this flood. And it was just like a chain reaction in the room. Mike, it ain't your fault. I could have done this, the A, B, and C. Another guy jump up. No, guys, if I would have done this, this, and this, it would. We could have solved this problem. And so now all of a sudden, I got four, five, six people taking ownership, just like I did, because I didn't get mad at anybody for flooding the building. I didn't point fingers. I took ownership, and now all of a sudden, they started doing the same thing because they felt safe. So as a CEO, I created a safe environment because I didn't have an attachment to being a good CEO. I was able to take 100% of the responsibility. And now we came up with a training plan moving forward. We bought a bunch of equipment for all the trucks. We made sure we put policies in place to make sure that this guy doesn't come off of contract jobs to work on tenant, which is part of the reason why it got changed. But we came up with 7, 8 action items to come out of that thing. And I'm not a sprinkler man. I don't know jack shit about sprinklers, but we were able to, as a group, develop a plan, and we've flooded one building since then. It's been 5 years later, and it had nothing to do with a sprinkler head. You know, we're still kind of curious how that other one happened, but we fixed the problem essentially, and we did it because, you know, I don't want to give myself 100% credit, but I definitely created an environment by not having that attachment to being the boss. I was able to take ownership of the problem and allow everybody else to feel safe.
Right. So I was literally just going to ask if removing attachments can make us more compassionate and emotionally intelligent. And it sounds like that's exactly what they do.
Yeah, because, like, you know, emotional intelligence is basically looked at amongst the Forbes top 10 companies as twice as valuable as your IQ. Right. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter if you've got a 200 IQ, if you're not emotionally intelligent, when you get into an emotional state, your intelligence just drops through the floor. You lose 40 to 60% of your intelligence in a high pressure situation. So part of being emotionally intelligent is regulating your emotions. And if you can remove attachments, and you're not having that physical response to being a good COO or, you know, being a good sprinkler man, or, you know, we're not having any of those responses. Now, all of a sudden, you're able to just react to whatever is happening in a way that is compassionate and loving and kind without defending yourself.
Right. Yeah. A lot of times the first thing people do is defend themselves. I went to a spa, the power went out one day, and I was like, oh, I got no Wi-Fi. So I went to a spa, and these people put this stuff on my face. And the next day I got this like bacteria infection. And I was like bad. Like my whole face was all red and puffy, and I had these like pussy bumps. And I went to back there and I said, hey, listen, I saw you guys yesterday and look at what happened. And the woman's like, oh, that wasn't us. Our products are fully natural. We didn't do it. And I was like, what? Like, it was so confusing to me. Cause I'm like, like, there's nothing else that could have happened. But like, I just feel like people are so quick to put up walls and defend and are scared to admit mistakes. And it was, I was a little bit shocked, but then I was like angry. I'm like, how could you not take responsibility for this? And you think I'm ever going to go back there? Probably not. You know, like they would have handled it differently. Like you said, taken full responsibility for it, offered me something. Then I would have been okay with it. But with that kind of reaction, I was like, screw you. I'm never coming back here. You know?
Yeah, they lost a podcast and lost a customer, and they potentially lost a lot more business because you do a lot of podcasts and you have a voice. So like, yeah, it's not a good thing at all to react that way, but it's very common for people when they're struck with something negative to respond. And it's not conscious. They're responding subconsciously because of the attachments that they're putting they're attaching to themselves. So it's logical. It makes sense. But, you know, if we start to understand what's truly happening around us and within our own self, we get to make a change to where we don't allow those attachments to hurt us anymore.
So what advice would you give to someone who's afraid of letting go of attachments, who is afraid that they'll lose their sense of purpose or drive if they do that? Because that's a big one. People think, well, then what?
Yeah, who am I if I lose this? The answer to that is you're so much more than what you're identifying with. And that is holding you back. So the way the yogis describe it is when we're born, we have zero attachments and we're connected to God and source up to about the age of two. And then our parents' world beats it all out of us, and we lose that. And then we spend our whole life living, fighting, doing whatever to get through this life that's difficult. And then in our latter years, we try to get back to that two-year-old. And so basically, the way back to that two-year-old is releasing everything we thought we needed to be whole. We were whole when we were born. We were whole. You are whole already. And the only reason you can't see it and you can't feel it is because you have all these attachments. You're holding on to things that aren't needed. You are so much infinitely more than what you're identifying with. To your point, it brings up another young person came through my program, and she couldn't remove being a UT fan. Not because she cared about the Tennessee Vols, but that was the only time she connected with her dad. And so those attachments are holding on to something else. You know, when she was able to cheer for the same team, her dad and her were able to bond. But that was really the only time. And so I understand it because it's usually connected to something else. It's not usually the thing that you're holding on to. It's
right. Cause that's their thing. So it's not only her attachment, it's his attachment, which makes it connect the two together. Yeah. So the fear of losing that attachment would mean that she would be losing that connection.
Yeah. That love of her dad. That's what she ultimately determined, is that she would be losing. And that's scary, but that's not real. That's not the reality. That's the subconscious mind telling you that's what you got to hold on to this because this is your life. This is everything. But it's not. It's unfortunately, it's scary, but it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be scary. But it is because your subconscious mind, literally, when you're thinking about getting rid of it, your subconscious mind is telling you don't. It's trying to hold on to that thing because it thinks if it loses it, it's gonna die. You're going to physically die if you lose being a Tennessee Titan fan or, you know, whatever that connection was with your dad. You know, it's scary and it's not logical. But once we start to understand that, my suggestion for people would be do kind of like what I do. I took off a couple simple things very early on, and I came back almost 2 years later and took off all the bigger things.
Well, talk to us about how do you remove attachments in a practical, really simple way. I know you said it's so easy, so tell us how you do it.
It is. It's so easy. If let's just say I have an attachment to being a COO, all I would have to do is say right now to you, one person, it doesn't matter who it is, just say it to your friend, say it to anybody, just I no longer identify as being a COO. I am so much more than a COO. And just say it out loud, and that's it. And your subconscious mind will get rid of it. So that same girl that I told her mom that she wasn't her daughter anymore. She doesn't identify as her daughter. Well, she's getting married now. And she comes to me about 2 months ago, right after their engagement party. And she's spinning out. Like she's falling back into her old patterns and she's just losing it about 2 or 3 days. And after about 20 or 30 minutes, we got to the bottom of it. The only problem that she was having now is that she started identifying with being a fiance. And that started causing chaos. She couldn't sleep at night. She was gauging whether or not he was going to leave her. Was the house going to be good enough? Was she good enough? All these things trying to protect now her being a fiance. And then, I mean, literally before she left my office, she got rid of it. She did find another core belief that she needed to get rid of. So she went home that night, did another core belief, got rid of the fiance tag, and it's been great. Like it's been 3 months. I see her all the time and she's fine. It's literally just that easy. We can get rid of all of our attachments and then go to our engagement party and everybody's asking you about your wedding and what's going on. And now you start identifying as a fiance and you don't want that to crash because you like the way it feels. And now all of a sudden, every decision that you make is dependent on that. And your body's freaking out. She was worried about what house they were going to get. Was it going to make him happy? Did it have a big enough garage? Was she going to lose herself? Like all this craziness. The second she took that off of her Christmas tree, she was like, it's going to be fine. He loves me. You know, and everything just went back to normal and she was happy.
Yeah. I just did a little test on myself as you were speaking. I was like, I thought of like losing some of my, like some of a job, you know, and how I would feel. And I think when you detach, then you realize that you can do anything and be anything. Right. But I think it's also like the fear of the unknown and having just trust and faith that life's going to unfold as it should without having attachments to anything. I think for me, that's the most difficult part is letting go of that.
Yeah. It's scary. It's a leap of faith, right? It's a leap of faith. But if you could, the leap of faith is that you are far more than what you were ever taught you were, right? Mm. That's the leap of faith. And I think we all have a knowing inside of us that, you know, when we were kids, we all thought we had superpowers and we were going to be these amazing beings or we were going to be the president of the United States or whatever. And the thing is, the world beats all that out of us, right? And the reality is all that was true. All that was possible. We do have powers. We are infinitely so much more than all these things we attach to. I'll give you another example of of how this works, and it works with my son. So I've got an 11-year-old boy. He just turned 11, and he has a rare form of dyslexia that's hereditary that he got from me. And so he's reading, you know, he's struggling reading very simple books right now. And for about the last year and a half, he started coming home crying, upset because he can't read the same as other kids in school. And it's just like a repeat of what I went through, right? All these core beliefs that I got created for me when I was a kid and caused me so much pain. And I suffered with it all the way till I was, 48, 49 years old when I got completely rewrote all those cool core beliefs. Well, he's going through them right now and they're creating them. And we talk through all this and he's still emotional sometimes and he'll get caught up in some of it. He'll get emotional in class, but if he could just get away from everybody and he could just say, I'm not a good reader or a bad reader. I'm so much more than a reader. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden that initial response that he has, it's making him worry about whether or not he's meeting the guidelines and whatever, it goes away. And he's able to just sit back down and try to start reading again and not be upset that, you know, kids that are 7 years old are reading far better than he is at 11. And all of a sudden, he doesn't have all of those attachments to being a good reader. So he's not being attacked. And it's kind of beautiful to watch my kid who's struggling with the same thing that I did. And he's got some of these tools, and when he uses them, and he doesn't always use them, but when he does, they shine really well for him, and he's able to get rid of all of that pain and hopefully avoid negative core beliefs that are going to haunt him forever.
Come on, guys, we're late.
Mom, can I use the tablet?
Are we there yet?
Can someone check we're going the right way on maps, please?
Are we there yet?
Oh, my phone's out of battery.
Here you go, use mine.
Can someone call Nan to let her know we're on our way?
Oh, are we there yet?
Guesting this Christmas? You need the UK's best mobile network. EE does more.
UK's best network. Root metrics data H125. Verify at ee.co.uk/claims.
Yeah, essentially, any attachment we have is the source of the pain in our lives. Because an attachment to an outcome, attachment to an item, attachment to a job, attachment to whatever it is basically going to cause us pain at some point because we're attached to an outcome and whatever else it is to do with that certain item, person, place, thing. You got me thinking now. You got me thinking about my life. Where can people find out more about your program and tell us a little bit more about it?
LearnToLoveBeingYou.com is where you can find it. And it's basically a 10-week program where you, in the first 3 weeks, you take manual control of your thoughts and emotions to help you kind of regulate the system, switch you into a manual state of peace. It's temporary, but you could do it as long as you could consciously wake up. You could shift yourself into that manual place, which is liberating, and to know that you don't have to be miserable all the time. And then for the next couple of weeks, you start to realize that you can live in a place of positivity, and you start to realize what's going on around you. And so for the next couple of weeks, you kind of go through a social rearrangement and of setting new boundaries and identifying where negativity is coming from your outside world. So we focus on it for the first 3 weeks, and then all of a sudden you start to realize, oh shit, I've got it coming at me from not just me, it's coming from all these other sources. So you got to rearrange your boundaries. And in those 2 weeks, we continue the program, but we do some perspective shifts and kind of lighten the load, allow you to just see a perspective on life change. And then for the next 3 weeks after that, 6 through 8, we kind of get into what we're talking about here is, you know, how to actually heal yourself, how to remove the things that are causing you pain. And then in week 9, we learn how to be authentic, and we learn that, you know, being honest and true is is really vital to your peace and happiness. Without it, you can't find it. And then wrapping up the program is you've worked so hard on your mind, and you start to get a connection. The stronger the mind is, the stronger the body is. The stronger the body is, stronger the mind's going to be. You start to work on the body and get a mind and body connection there going on, and they both get stronger. And then at the very end, you just kind of set up a 2-year action plan to continue to heal, because we can get rid of anxiety really quick, but depression, which we all have a certain level of, it takes years to get rid of it. It took most of us 20, 30 years to fill up that anxiety, depression bucket. And you're not going to get rid of it in a 10-week program, but we can put you on a path to where in the next 2 years, you've got it kicked, and you're living a life that you didn't imagine was possible.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being here and for talking about attachments and your program. So learntolovebeingyou.com. The last question I'll ask is, what does it feel like to live as just the tree?
Say that. Oh, to live as just the tree. It's amazing. You know, I don't want to get
like not
too mystical.
Like not the Christmas tree, a tree that is just no ornaments, just plain.
You start to open up to a hidden world. This world becomes so much more than you can imagine. The universe will start to speak to you. The other trees will start to speak to you. You'll see synchronicities in life. When you close your eyes, you can experience life in a different way. When you remove everything and you start to live in the silence, you start the silent hidden world starts to open up, and it's truly amazing. I can't explain it to most people because they think I'm crazy.
And I will say this, and you start to notice other people's attachments really, really quickly.
Oh yeah. You see them everywhere. Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much for being here. What a great chapter.
Thank you. I appreciate everything you're doing to help me get this message out.
Yes, and what a message it is to our audience. Think about what you're attached to. If you imagine that thing, person, place, thing, item, sporting team out of your life, how does that make you feel? If you're having a visceral reaction, maybe it's time you look at that a little bit deeper. Till next time, take care, everyone.
Olivia loves a challenge. It's why she lifts heavy weights and likes complicated recipes. But for booking her trip to Paris, Olivia chose the easy way with Expedia. She bundled her flight with a hotel to save more. Of course, she still climbed all 674 steps to the top of the Eiffel Tower. You were made to take the easy route. We were made to easily package your trip. Expedia, made to travel. Flight inclusive packages are at all protected.